Just look at the fucking bums you hang around with.
What is nothing?
Now that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
What is something?
That's deep, bro. I reached over. That was not a suave move. Welcome to That's Deep, Bro. I'm your host, Christina P. Thank you for downloading this episode. Very exciting. I was very fired up to record this one. I was just hot off the heels of recording my special, but it led me into thinking of a lot of other topics, and I answer a lot of emails. And it's a goodie. It's a good one. But before that, let's get into some dates. I am going on, not on tour, I guess I'm just starting from scratch. September 22nd and 23rd, St. Louis, Missouri, at the Helium Comedy Club. So get your tickets there at thousandranch.com. And other than that, I've just got the Comedy Store. If you're in town, come see me. I'm usually in the original room, 7:30 show on Saturdays. That's my jam. I love a 7:30 audience. Just so civilized. You know, you want to come, you want to watch comedy, you want to have a good time, but you also want to be home in time for House Hunters International. I agree with you. That's the same thing. Okay. Amazon, shop using my banner. Go to thatsdeepbropodcast.com. Click on the banner at the bottom of every post. Do your shopping as you normally would. It just helps the show. All right. So I have a new sponsor. I absolutely love this. As you know, I don't buy super expensive clothing, but I do now rent it with Rent the Runway. I don't know if you've been to the mall. I recently was at the country club with my son and I saw the store and I went in and I was like, wait, what is this? You can just rent these dresses? What? And lo and behold, they contacted me to sponsor the show and I couldn't believe that I'd actually like had an encounter with them. It was that cool. I like when stuff comes together. Getting dressed is a drag when you've got a closet full of clothes you regret buying or have only worn once. Finally experience a wardrobe you love with Rent the Runway's unlimited subscription to everyday fashion. Enjoy the thrill of new clothes without the commitment, closet space, or buyer's remorse. 70% of unlimited members say they shop less now that they subscribe to fashion. So here's how it works. Unlimited is a subscription to fashion that gives you access to a rotating closet filled with premium designer styles for work, weekends, and everything in between. Okay, here's how it goes. It's a flat monthly price and you rent unlimited designer pieces on rotation. Select three pieces at a time, keep them as long as you want. When you're ready for something new, swap any of your pieces for fresh styles. And if you fall in love with something, you can buy it at an exclusive discount and keep it forever. Free shipping and dry cleaning on every piece. Newest styles from over 450 designers like Vince Theory, Tory Burch, Derek Lamb, Opening Ceremony, Marnie, DVF, and more. There's also tops, dresses, pants, skirts, jackets, handbags, jewelry, and sunglasses. You just go to the website. It's super, super easy peasy. Let's say if you have a wedding to go to. I never have anything to wear to weddings. It's the worst. But now with Rent the Runway. You go, you browse all the dresses, and I rented a dress. I'm hoping I'm saying it right. Marquesa Knott, Notte. It says here the dress is $795. Yeah, right. Like I would ever pay that much money. I rented it for a lot less. It gets sent to your front door. You try it on. If you like it, you keep it for as long as you want, and then you return it. No biggie. Super easy, easy, easy peasy. And you know me, I don't like shopping. I don't like going out to shop. I mean, this is the best way to do it, and you get all the cool stuff, and you just rent it. Super, super, super easy. Okay, so here's how it goes. My listeners can get 25% off their first month. Visit renttherunway.com/unlimited or download the iPhone app. Enter code BRO at checkout to get that 25% discount. Again, visit renttherunway.com/unlimited or download the iPhone app. Enter code BRO at checkout to get the 25% discount. Check it out, guys. Especially for big events. I mean, why are you buying it? Don't buy it. Just rent it. Rent the runway. Okay. Thank you, Rent the Runway. Oh, and we're back again. My favorite is Talkspace. As you know, with this show, I advocate therapy, therapy, therapy. I mean, I don't know how people go through life without talking to somebody about your everyday stuff. It doesn't have to be super heavy. It could be just stuff that causes you anxiety. I'm so thrilled that Talkspace is sponsoring today's episode. Talkspace is an online therapy company. Talkspace makes it easy to connect with a licensed therapist handpicked just for you for as little as $32 a week. I mean, that is such a bargain for therapy for what you're getting. Using Talkspace, you can text, audio, and video message your therapist and talk about your life, what's keeping you up at night, or even your annoying coworker. To sign up or to learn more, go to Talkspace.com/bro. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BRO to get $30 off your first month. That's code BRO at Talkspace.com/bro. Talkspace, therapy for how we live today. And I have spoken to so many of you via, you know, social media and in person that have tried Talkspace. I think this is a great thing for those of you who might be in between therapists. Maybe you live somewhere in a remote area. Maybe you can't afford or you do whatever. You don't want to go spend the money on a therapist right now. But this is a fantastic, fantastic service. So thank you, Talkspace. Okay. All right, guys, let it rip. Here we go. Goodness, I sound like a real Midwestern mom there. Oh my gosh. The Beastie Boys. Come on. There's nobody better than these guys. I was listening to an interview that Ad Rock did about the, what is it, 25th year anniversary of Paul's Boutique, which is it's a funny story because they were with Def Jam for their first album, and then they went to Capitol Records to do Paul's Boutique, their second album, because Def Jam insisted that they remain like rappers, essentially. Like, they were copying Run DMC on License to Ill, their first album, which was great. It was fantastic. And they're like, nah, dude, we don't want to do that again. We'll be one trick ponies. Don't pigeonhole us. So they leave Def Jam. They go to Capitol Records. They make Paul's Boutique, which is a fucking amaze record. If you haven't heard Paul's Boutique, get your life. Download that shit now on iTunes. Knowledge Yourself, because it's fantastic and it's such a departure from the first album. Anyways, long story short, Capitol Records gets a new boss, and when Paul's Boutique is ready to be released, they don't give it any kind of love or publicity, and instead they get behind the new Donny Osmond record, because they're like, we're going to put all chips in on Donny, guys, not the hip, new, young, punky rap group. Not what's coming up, but what's going down. So they got behind Osmond, obviously, who gives a shit. No one's talking about the 25th year anniversary of the Donny Osmond record that came out, but... So what? Anyway, the point being that these guys, you know, this is they're new in the record business. They're young. They're like 20 years old. Their first record's huge. They decide to come to L.A., which is I didn't even realize how many records they actually did in L.A., which is why I fucking love them. Come on, dude. Did they reference Glendale Boulevard and all this shit? And they have a house in the Hollywood Hills, and they're three young dudes, and they found like a chest full of 70s clothes. So what do? They fucking put them on and they make videos of themselves being clowns in these 70s outfits. And of course, you know, all these great videos are born with them being goofballs. And now what's really interesting is that Capitol Records says to them, okay, so this new album's coming out. We're going to take a photo shoot. We're going to do your photo shoot. And the Beastie Boys are like, no, that's okay. We've, you know... Adam bought this camera, Adam Yauch, who's now dead, but Adam Yauch apparently was like, had the fucking, the coolness to know about shit that nobody knew about. Like, he always knew about the cameras, is what they said about, like, there's this new 360 camera, you can also film underwater, and, you know, these three clowns just took this camera, and they're like, oh, we'll just take pictures of ourselves in the surrounding areas of, like, this Hollywood Hills house that we're renting, and it ended up being, like, these fucking defining... iconic images of the Beastie Boys, these 360 like fisheye lens shots, and it really defined their style. And what I find so appealing about that is the initiative. You know, I mean, how many times in life does anybody take the initiative and go like, no, I don't want to take your fucking whack ass record company photos, because they were saying, I didn't know this about the industry, their industry, but, you know, apparently they'll have you posing, like doing corny shit and stuff that's not you, and surprise that, you know, show business doesn't always know creatively what's right for you. And it's a huge lesson in terms of like doing you. Right? Just do you, bro. Like, nah, these three dudes, they took what was given to them. You know, these wacky 70s outfits that they found in this house they were renting, the woods around them. If you look at the video for So What You Want, these guys are just jumping around and they're having fun. And it became like, you really feel the energy of something like that. It's so fucking, it's so real. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good when you see people doing shit that they really feel, you know, you can't manufacture that kind of authenticity. And I say that about any band that you like. Mostly you like an artist because of the authenticity, the fucking real that just ekes out, and you can't fake that shit. So good. So good. So anyway, I'm on the other side. I filmed my special and it went amazingly. And I would like to thank everybody who showed up in Seattle and everybody that came and watched me prepare for this thing. And my God, even Burbank, the Yoohoo room was packed with fans of Your Mom's House, and that's Deep Row. And I cannot thank you enough, sincerely. It really, really means the world to me to have people familiar with who I am and what I'm about show up at these shows, because I tell you, it's been 14 years of looking at blank expressions when I say crazy stuff on stage, and I don't like that. I'm really hoping this special broadens the audience so that even more people who get it show up. If I'm not for you, that I don't care. It's not the point. Just God damn it. Like, just Google me before you show up. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't go to a movie and just be like, what's playing? I don't know. Let's just go. No, you research people before you hopefully show up and spend an hour of your life with them and invest in a babysitter and nachos and shit like that. But, it went so well. And, I'm just so thrilled. And my husband came with me and we surprised the audience and had Tommy open for me on both shows and bring me up. And it was so special to have my husband there. And like, that was the best, dude. I really don't know what I would do without my husband there. Probably fucking spiral out and eat pancakes all day And I don't know. It was so nice to have companionship that was meaningful, you know, because so often on the road, you're just alone. You're with like people that you don't really know that well. And that's really the hard part of comedy is being alone a lot in different cities. I mean, you kind of know people, but you know, not really. But it really got me into thinking about two things this weekend. Number one, who you surround yourself with. And my cousin came to visit, and she, I've spoken about her on the show, and I absolutely adore her. I admire her for her ability to be fiercely, fiercely individual, and really she dances to the beat of her own drummer. And she and her husband moved to this kind of remote part, this foresty part of Washington, and they live on like just like a rad kind of off the grid homesteady fucking weird life, and I love it. And I got to see her, and she and I got to talking about how unconsciously we both kind of married people who bring out the side in ourselves that we wanted to see more of. You know, like when you know you're attracted to certain people unconsciously. And I'm not talking like just romantically, I'm talking about friendships. You know that saying, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And I think we're drawn to friends or to spouses or business partner, whoever, because unconsciously there's something that needs to be fulfilled, worked out. Maybe they have something you don't have that you want to get more of. And sometimes the relationships are negative. Sometimes you're attracting people to you who take the place of a parent that was maybe not kind, or some figure in your life that you haven't resolved issues behind, and you'll keep attracting. I mean, I can't tell you how many bad mommies I attracted over the course of my adult life until I really worked out the issues in therapy that were underlying all that stuff. Because believe me, if you haven't worked out your shadow self, is that's the hippie side of what they talk about. Everyone has a shadow self, right? It's the dark side of your force. It's those unconscious drives, those unresolved wounds from childhood. I'm full psychoanalysis. I believe that it's all rooted in childhood and those, and not to say that that's good or bad or whatever the fuck, but you're wired a certain way. And then you either repeat dramas hoping that they'll turn out differently. That's the point, right? You attract the same negative situation, hoping that you can control it, change it, have some kind of agency over it, or you resolve those underlying issues and you stop attracting the same thing. And what I by that I mean, I'm not saying you literally attract the same person, but you'll attract a situation or scenario that mimics the emotional environment of the early thing that you're trying to resolve unconsciously, even sometimes, which is really what I talk about on this show, is getting that unconscious stuff brought to the conscious level so that you can deal with it. You can get to the feelings of it, get to the hurtness of it, and then get your life. That's the whole fucking point, is that you, you get it to the conscious level so that you can get on with things and you can live a happy life. And that is why I advocate therapy on this show. I am not a substitute for actual therapy. And I can't urge you enough, if you're listening and you're depressed, you're anxious, you're fucked up and all this stuff, go until you find a therapist that works for you. And if you have no money, that is no excuse. When I started seeing my shrink, the shrink that I see now, I paid her maybe $20 a week. I'm not exaggerating because we were so broke. Google the words sliding scale therapy and your zip code. Sliding scale is the phrase you need to say. That means that they will charge you dependent upon how much money you can afford to pay them. And you know, a lot of really, really fantastic therapists are in their final hours of training, and they're overseen by other therapists that already have their PhDs or whatever. And they're in their hours, their qualifying hours or whatever. And that's when I caught my shrink. She's fucking brilliant in those qualifying hours. So they'll treat you on a sliding scale, and your case is overseen by more qualified or whatever credentialed people until they get their credentials, and then they move on, and then you guys work out a new arrangement. And that we did for years, and it's great. So sliding scale, guys, for anybody who's like, I can't, and then don't give me that shit about not having time. Don't even, don't even get me on the time. You make time for the things that are important. We all know that. So reprioritize your life and get it. Okay, enough of that. But it got me into thinking about the people that come, that go, that stay, that influence you throughout the course of your life, your career, whatever. And I gave this radio interview a few weeks back in like Phoenix, I think. No, I don't know. Denver. And I remember the guy asked me, he goes, oh, you're, who do you attribute your success to? Did you do it yourself or did people help you? And I, you know, when you answer a question and you're like, oh, I wish I could go back and re-answer that because I didn't answer it the way I wanted to. Like at the time, I think he was trying to be funny or we were trying to be funny. And I kind of got hooked on the word success. And I was like, look, I am not, I'm nowhere near as successful as I'd like to be. And I think that most people in show business, even Tom Cruise goes, look, I could be more successful. So I was focusing on that end of the question as opposed to the part about people. And one time I was listening to Pharrell talk to Oprah Winfrey about this very thing where he's like, you know, I mean, he's so annoying. I know he's a really talented guy, but he's also one of these guys that really drank his own Kool-Aid, in my opinion, of like, I mean, he's fucking talented. Like, don't get me wrong. He's talented, but he's also one of those people that he never smiles in pictures on Instagram. And you know me, guys, I'm a student of Instagram. And I have such weirdness around people who don't, like, how do you maintain your cool that much? Like you never are just swept away by the joy of taking a photo with somebody that you have to smile. Like I smile like a douchebag in like every picture almost. I have to contain my joy. And my uncomfortability, it's really uncomfortability, I think, of taking photos. I don't enjoy it. I just, ugh, especially selfies, blech, barf, I can't do it. But so Pharrell is always very serious and very artistic. And he was talking to Oprah about how, you know, there's so many people who helped me on the way up. And my music teacher, when I was in fifth grade, he handed me a flute and I put that flute up my ass. And then my mom, she gave me a bowl of macaroni and cheese. And that inspired me to write the song Happy because it made me happy. Like all these stupid. And he was so like overly barfy, effusive about the people that helped. And I was like, all right, I get it. But don't you think some of it had to do with you? Like you were just kind of natively, you know, talented and yeah, they saw it in you. But, and then now I realized too, like, wow, there's so many people that got me to filming that special on Saturday, like so many people. And I mean, even the people who didn't give me what I wanted in the past, like, I'm so thankful that I did not shoot that. I had an opportunity a couple years ago to do one and the deal was not right for me and I refused it. And I remember at the time thinking like, oh no, that's it. That was it. That was the, you know, the shot. And then like, no, 2 years, I just was patient. And then the opportunity came and it came in an even better way, shape and form. I was a better comedian. I'm a bit more grounded now that I have a child and a family, like, you know, whatever. I'm more grounded and it was way less anxiety inducing than it would be a couple of years back. I'll tell you, I was way more neurotic 2 years ago, way more me, my problem. I'm me, mom. So it is the people along the way. And I, like I said, it's not just the positive people. It's not just the, you know, my sweet loving husband who has fucking taught me how to be a person and not a wild animal that I was when I met him. My shrink, it's been friends who've encouraged me, who've been so supportive. But it's also been the shitheads. When you think about it too, the shitheads have just as much to do with shaping me as the positive people. And I say shitheads in a loving, odd way, because whenever we attract and entertain the shitheads, you're always going to attract the shitheads. That stuff, I don't think, ever ends. But it's whether or not you invite the shithead in, let the shithead sit on your couch, let the shithead eat your fucking oatmeal, and then, you know, throw the bowl on the floor. That's what I'm talking about. So the shitheads, when you think about them, and this could be romantic shitheads, business shitheads, friendship shitheads, what they do is they let you know Uh-oh, boo-boo. Uh-oh. This is your red light. Uh-oh. What have you not worked out that you're entertaining the shithead? Because like I said, you're never going to, there's crazies everywhere. It's not that. There's people that are yes, evil. I believe inherently evil, born shitty. There's people that are manipulators, sociopaths, narcissists, schemers, soulless, evil succubus sent here to ruin everyone else's good time. And then there's nice people, but there are shit bags. And I think what they have taught me is like, why did I let the shit bag in? That's the real thing, is like, they're going to knock, but it's up to you whether or not you let the succubus in. You know what I'm saying? Like the vampire has to be invited in. Even in the Twilight movies, right? I believe you have to invite, no, you have to invite the werewolf in. But traditionally, you have to invite the bloodsucker in. And that's a wonderful metaphor. And I don't know who came up with this shit, but the vampire movie, all the lore of the vampire is essentially allowing narcissists, sociopaths, scumbags into your life. So the vampires exist throughout in the world. They're going to knock on your door, but the vampire has no power over you unless you open the door. That's the crazy thing. So don't open the door. And if you do make the mistake of opening the door and they get in, it means that you've got work to do. And so I'm thankful for every vampire that's come in and out of my life, because the vampires show you where your blind spots are, your unresolved stuff. Because if your stuff is resolved, you would never invite the vampire in. You'd recognize it quickly. You go, oh, that's a vampire. I'm out of here. And then you turn the hell around and you get out of there, right? But if you don't know where your stuff is, if you don't know what unconscious stuff is driving you, then you get tangled up in their bullshit and you can for years. And it's, man, and then it's tricky. But I'm so thankful for the vampires who have come and gone in my life, because it did show me like, that's what I'm doing here. Okay. Because it's never about the vampire, by the way. I don't fault these people. It's about the original wound. It's about the original thing that created the sore spot that you haven't fully worked out. And then those people kind of, they feed into that blind spot of yours. They don't do it intentionally. Some do. Some are sociopathic, crazy, legit weirdos who know how to do that stuff. Most people are doing it unconsciously. I believe people are inherently good. I don't believe people are inherently bad, but it's up to you to find those spots. And anyway, hopefully the show will help you about that. Also, I wanted to talk about preparation, and my agent, after we filmed both shows and they were really great and everybody was really happy and, you know, everyone's back slapping each other and high-fiving in the green room after. And I immediately rip off my outfit because I'm wearing like 5 layers of Spanx under them. And I hate, you know, I hate that stuff. I hate shapewear. I hate dresses. I hate everything. And I'm standing there just stripping down in front of my agents and executive producers and all these people, and they're trying not to watch me get undressed. But I don't care. Once you've got a kid, you've got a mom bod, and your body takes on a different meaning once you've had a child. It becomes totally functional. you want to look at these tits? Be my guest, because I sure as hell don't. Go for it. So I'm stripping down, and we're sitting there. And I'm having my glass of Pinot Grigio and just kind of quietly talking to my cousin, who I haven't seen in a while. And my husband's chatting with the agents. And my agent looks at me and he goes, do you realize you just taped a comedy special? He's like, you seem so calm. And in my head, I go, yeah. I think part of that was like, yeah, you don't really realize the gravity of some shit sometimes. Like sometimes the biggest things happen and they come and they go and you don't even realize it. And sometimes opportunities show up. And it can be in like the form of just an email or, you know, somebody fucking DMs you and it's like this big opportunity and you don't even realize it. And most of the time, the biggest players often come in the most unassuming packages. I've learned that too, is that the ones who talk the big talk generally aren't the big shit. The big shit usually happens subtly. The big life-changing stuff happens, and it just happens under your nose, and you don't even realize it. So I was sitting there, and I was thinking to myself, well, yeah, I'm really thankful. I'm actually, all I wanted for this taping, all I want going into anything that requires being under pressure is to be present. And it's so corny, and I fucking hate it, and it's very Oprah to say, but you, like, my whole desire for this wasn't even that people like me or that it's successful, but that I am able to be connected to my own brain, because it's really easy to disassociate when you're under pressure. And any performer knows this, like whether you're a dancer or any kind of performance artist, like, you know, sometimes you let the crowd get to you and then you disassociate and you're not connected to your thoughts and feelings. And all I wanted was to be connected. And I got to thinking, like, well, how can I maintain that connection? And well, meditation is really important. I did transcendental meditation a while back, and I was meditating a lot. And also I got to thinking about the ego and your mind. The closer you get to success or failure will fuck with you. You best believe that when something big is coming up for you, whether it be an exam, some big life thing, that when you're close to success or failure, your mind will play tricks on you. It will fuck with you. So, like, I've heard that before. Marianne Williamson talks about this in her, you know, talks on iTunes, which you can download. They're awesome. And I heard my ego talk some shit. I heard that motherfucker talk some shit right around Monday before, a week before I taped Saturday. And Monday morning I woke up and I was hearing some shit, some chatter. And I was like, that's interesting. What is that? Where is that coming from? What is that? What's the negative chatter about? And you realize that the negative chatter is just the mind. It's just, it is whatever unresolved. Sometimes the voices aren't yours. They're stuff that you've heard growing up from other people. It's usually not from you. I don't think so. When you tell yourself bad things, I found that, I mean, look, no baby, and I know this from raising a human right now, babies are not born hating themselves. Nobody comes into this world saying, my stomach's fat and my legs are too chubby and how gross that I shit into a diaper. Like, you don't judge that stuff until somebody else tells you to judge that stuff. That's the crazy part, is that some grown-up, some well-meaning grown-up along the way shames you for shitting in a diaper, and now you're weird about taking a shit for the rest of your life. Like, that's how it fucking works. So just know that you are born a divine, perfect being, child of God, yeah, blah, blah, stardust, yes, all of that. And then along the way, you learn who you are through other people. That's the only way we know that's the only way you learn who you are, is all these mirrors, these people around you who are supposed to mirror whatever. And sometimes you get negative messages that stick with you forever and ever. And you don't even know that it's not your shit. That's the unconscious stuff I talk about too, right? That, for instance, my mother, she was so funny. She would always tell me that I was bad at singing. You're a terrible singer. Oh, you're a terrible voice. Never sing in public. And of course, I sing as a joke all the time. I don't genuinely sing. And I think a lot of that is because somebody told me that I was a terrible singer. And it doesn't belong to me. And I know that. But then you carry these beliefs for a long time. I'm no good at swimming. I'm no good at math. I'm not good at reading. I'm not good at whatever it is. And it's not even yours. It's not even your thing. So the point is, I invite you to look at these unconscious beliefs. Why aren't I'm not good at art. Well, how do you know that? Is that true? Is that really true? Or is that something that somebody gave you the message about somewhere in your past, and now you've internalized that, and that's nothing to do with you? And know that the closer you get to doing something your heart wants you to do, the ego will fuck with you. The ego will, you know, the human brains want to preserve stasis, meaning we don't like change, humans. And so the brain, when it senses something is going to change, will fucking make you panic. No, stop. Don't do that. Don't go there. Don't do the thing that's going to evolve you to get you to the next place, because we can't handle the change. Humans don't like change. Okay, so before I get into this tangent, I want to get into the first tangent. If you have not read the book Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, and you are somebody who is in the midst of achieving, if you are in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, and you're grinding right now, I hate that word grinding. I hate it. I love listening to Gary V say it, Gary Vaynerchuk. If you haven't found Gary Vaynerchuk on Instagram, do yourself a favor. He's great. I love him so much. But he talks about grinding. Everyone's grinding right now. That's the big thing. You must be working until your eyes bleed. And I don't subscribe to grinding anymore. I grinded out my 20s. I grinded out my 30s. And now I am gently coasting through my 40s because I've done the grinding. Okay. But if you are in the midst of grinding, which is necessary, it is actually very necessary. I don't think you can lead a balanced life in your 20s when you're trying to establish yourself. I think it's very normal to fall out of balance. All this hippy dippy balance shit happens once you've established a few things. Once you've established who you're going to partner up with, your spouse, once you've established a career path, once you've decided on your on God, and once you've resolved the kid issue, once you've got those four things squared away, then I believe you are getting your life. Those are and therapy. Come on, guys, you got to look back too before you can go ahead. But anyway, read Malcolm Gladwell. The book is called Outliers. The word outlier meaning anybody who has achieved anything extraordinary. The people who are like the Beatles, the who's that kid, the golfer, the guy, Tiger Woods, who unfortunately just got pulled over for DUI or whatever, but and had a little problem with hookers. It did achieve amazing heights of glory, however. And who, I mean, really, most people that are that driven have some kind of demon, something that compels them to overcompensate. But read the book. He talks about having 10,000 hours of practice. And your 10,000 hours of practice, the Beatles practiced for 10,000 hours in Germany, which is part of the reason they were so great at what they did. They played the standards over and over in Germany. In Germany, it was at Hamburg, I think Hamburg, in a basement. So they grinded out those hours and they got really good at what they did. And I'm a firm believer in 10,000 hours of practice before you're good at anything. There are no shortcuts, certainly not in stand-up comedy. Yeah, you can win a contest. You can get a big break on some sitcom or movie and people can know about you. But if they show up to your show and your show sucks because you don't have 10,000 hours under your belt of practice, you will lose your credibility as a stand-up comedian and people won't pay to see you again. So there are no shortcuts. My father used to say that all the time and I 100% agree. There are no shortcuts. So do your 10,000 hours of practice and read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. So hold on. We're talking about people. Oh, so I wanted to bring up this idea too of... Gosh, I listened to this woman and I'm so sad that I don't remember her name. Sam something, Sammy. But this got me to thinking about, there's a book by Fedor Dostoevsky, Russian guy in the late 1800s. Dostoevsky wrote a book called Notes from Underground. That was my Russian accent. Existentialist. The father of existentialism, I believe, one of the earliest works. I know Jean-Paul Sartre is considered to be also, but this book by Dostoevsky, Notes from Underground, for me has this, I love this idea in it, the idea of inertia and overcoming inertia. And this is why, this is very interesting. I don't believe in, I hate self-help because of the idea of like motivating yourself. I love Tony Robbins, but I would blow my brains out if I went to one of his seminars where he makes you jump up and down and get excited. I'm getting excited. Yeah, I'm going to achieve. And I got to tell you that personally, for me, that excited over the top. Yeah, I'm fucking pumped energy going into life, going into the day is really, in my opinion, frantic, chaotic, and uncentered. And that frantic, chaotic, uncentered energy is not the energy you need to go in and golf your highest golf games, Tiger Woods. I would tell you, I'm pretty sure Tiger Woods doesn't jump up and down and get frantic before he golfs. Or any great athlete, I don't know. I'm assuming, because they seem so centered. And to do that, to me, expels a lot of energy, whereas I like to get calm and focused. For me personally, that energy is a fucking nightmare, okay? If anyone walks up to me super pumped, I'm like, dude, get the fuck away from me. I am terrified of you. So this idea in Dostoevsky, it's about inertia. And now the book is there's a million themes, and I'm not going to go into all of them, but there's this idea of the underground man who's writing the book. He calls himself the underground man because he fancies himself to be highly intellectual, smartest guy in the room. And he's saying that if you're conscious, that you're not going to be inclined, there's no point in acting. That's the whole thing, right? If I'm a conscious, if I'm enlightened, if I am a smart being, there's no point in doing anything. What's the point in doing shit? Like, there's no point in being angry. There's no point in doing anything. And that it's usually the dum-dums who are acting. That's one of many. If I could cruelly butcher the work of Dostoevsky's Notes from Underground, that would be it. Which is, smart people don't do shit, dumb people do. Which is oddly true. And I don't know that Dostoevsky would appreciate me cliff noting his work like that. But there's some truth to that, if I'm interpreting that correctly. Which is right. Because in my opinion, you're never going to mind fuck your way into being motivated to get the thing done. Inertia means you're not acting, right? That's the principle in physics. Something will stay at rest until another body moves it into motion, inertia. But there's also emotional inertia, which is what Dostoevsky is talking about. You're so smart, you outthink yourself, right? You overthink yourself into not acting. And now the self-help world will tell you, well, you got to get pumped. You got to motivate yourself. You got to love what you do. You got to be full of passion all the time. No negative thoughts ever. Never get negative. And that is so far from what it is to be a human. And I think it's really dangerous, because what you're saying is like, I'm going to shut out these negative energies, guys. No. And that's why, I think people that meditate and do yoga are so gross to so many of us, is because you're like, well, all this shit about good vibes, Christina, and like, you know, good energy, positive energy. Like it's good to have it. I'm not saying that. Hold on. My nanny's texting me and I always have okay, she's good. That, not that there's anything bad with positive energy, but the expectation that you should always be pumped and stoked and on top of your game, and we're jumping up and down and we're fucking cartwheeling our way into doing, it's like, no, that's not how life works, boo-boo. Sometimes, some days, most days, when you're grinding out your 10,000 hours of practice, right, you're becoming the Beatles, there are days where you don't want to do the thing that you know you have to do. Most days, there, you know, every time I book a stand-up show, Tom and I have this running joke in the house of like, do I have to go? Fuck, why did I book that show? Why did I do this? And I even, right before I walked up to tape my special this past weekend, I looked at him and I go, do you want to do this for me? Because I don't fucking want to, you know, when do you ever want to do the thing that you know you have to do? You never fucking do. And the only way out of this inertia, the only way out of inactivity, it's not through making yourself stoked. It's not through fooling your brain or endorphins or whatever fucking horse shit they're going to tell you. It really is through sheer force of will. That's it. Sheer force of will. Forcing yourself to be a fucking grown-up and do the thing you don't want to do over and over and over and over. Because you know that there's a long game here, right? You know that in the long run, somewhere, some way, that's going to pan out. It's going to work out for you if you keep doing it, right? Past behavior dictates future behavior. So if you're a winner in the past, you're likely going to be a fucking winner in the future. But it really, I think what separates people, at least what I've seen over the years, is that sheer force of will. The initiative to pick up the camera as a Beastie Boy and go, no, we're not going to let the record company take these goofy ass photos. We're going to take our own photos. And we're just going to take the initiative here. I'm going to pick up this wacky camera and we're going to make some stuff that's
really out there, and it's gonna, and who knows who's gonna like it, and who knows whatever, but we're gonna take the initiative, and there is no other way. And I, you know, and how do I get there, Christina? Well, find what fucking, look, for me, and this is just the truth of it, for me, to get me through 14 years of being a comic and doing every fucking hibachi grill, seafood restaurant, dive bar, shit dump place as a comic, for me, unfortunately, it was kind of a negative reason, because I was a very angry teenager. I was a very angry youth. And that anger really fueled me into proving people wrong. I want to show them. I'm going to show you that I can do this. And, you know, hey, whatever works for you. For me, that anger really, I rode that anger wave for a good couple of decades, man. Was it the healthiest? No. Not really. You know, do I wish that my motivation were more positive? Yeah, but it is now, only through, you know, having worked out my issues. But, you know, find your fucking thing. And for me, it was that. And I readily admitted to it, that I was an angry person, and that was my fuel. And, you know, hey, whatever gets you to point A and point B, I just knew I had to do it. So if you're trying to prove someone wrong, let that be your fuel. Let the negative fuel you. I don't know why it's so bad. Is that what Tony Robbins would say? Let the negative side of your personality completely influence and fuel you to success. That's the only way. I mean, look, most people become successful not because of the good stuff, not because of parents who told them they could do it and you can do anything. You do that, you become good at stuff despite. John Lennon's mother abandoned him as an infant. His dad died. And yet at 15 years old, he knew to start the Beatles. You know what I'm saying? And I doubt it came from strong parental support and a good sense of self-worth and motivation. No, he was trying to get laid. He was trying to get the fuck out of Liverpool. He was trying to be a rock star. What better motivation is that, man? Anyway, it doesn't always come positive, and it's okay. And that's the point. And I think it's okay to have some negative fuel in there, in that tank. Cause man, oh man, that's the one thing that kept my ass going. Okay. Let's get on with it. Oh, one more thing I wanted to bring up. I was thinking the other day too, I don't like to hide behind roles of victimization. It's a tangent to this too, is that, and I know right now it's like such a hot button PC topic to talk about privilege. Everyone's talking about white privilege, white male privilege, cisgender privilege. I see this on, and by everybody, I mean whatever's on Facebook at the moment. I see a lot of this feminist dialogue, which is fantastic, and the gender dialogue, which is interesting and fantastic as well, and feminism. And I am a feminist, 1,000%. Absolutely. I am a feminist, existentialist, fucking vegan, paleo. I don't know what I am. I'm me. The point is, all this stuff is great. Social movements are great. But ultimately, I find it a little dangerous because people really sink into these victim roles of the man is keeping you down. And it's the structure, it's the cisgendered white male privilege that's keeping every... And again, it's important. I really do believe it's important to have these dialogues. I'm not poo-pooing them whatsoever. But on an individual basis, look, bitch, I'm just letting y'all know that as a 40-year-old girl, you think nobody told me I could do shit as a woman ever in my life. I never heard, you know, come on, there's no empowering messages in the 80s for us. So... You gotta do the best that you can in the time space continuum that you are living in. That's my point. Don't let the outside world fucking tell you who you are anyways. Who gives a shit who the president is? Who gives a shit who's in power? Who gives a shit if the media makes you feel fat, ugly, whatever? Who cares? They don't fucking live in your house. They don't sleep with you in your bed. And you certainly don't let these assholes tell you how to live your life. Don't let anybody fucking define you. Why are you letting outside forces mess with your brain? And I'm not saying that those forces don't have real consequences and real systemic prejudices. And absolutely, dude, I'm not saying that stuff doesn't exist. I'm just saying that on the flip side of it, on a day-to-day, get your fucking life, get your head out of your ass, wake up and just do the best you can with the circumstances you're given, man. You know, I don't know. I feel like I see a lot of people hiding behind like, and feminism, and I can't feel good about myself because they won't let me, because the ads aren't, the models are making me feel bad, and the cosmetics industry is making me feel bad. Like, well, okay. Yeah. I know what you're saying. I agree with you. I think it's all insidious and I think it's bullshit, but nobody can make you feel any less. You're doing it. Then don't look at it. Don't buy into, don't believe the hype. You know, they're not giving you an eating disorder. You're giving you an eating disorder. So, you know, again, it's never about the fucking outside world, dude. It's never going to be perfect. The world is never going to be all inclusive of every spectrum of every being on. I just don't think it's going to fucking, not in my lifetime. Maybe in a few generations we'll get there. But until then, bros, like, this is it. This is your 90-year span that you've got. You're going to let them, you're going to let them tell you who you are. You're going to let them make you feel fat and ugly. Okay, then let them. Then they fucking win. And that, by the way, I don't even think that's their intention. Everyone's just trying to sell shit. Everyone's just trying to sell shit to you anyways, right? God damn it. All right. Let's get on with some emails, guys. Sorry, I'm rambling a lot today. I'm very emotional, very big week. And yeah. I just, I'm also reading an email as I'm talking. I'm so rude. I'm so rude. Okay, here we go. This comes from Erica. And I got a lot of emails about last week's episode about codependency and having parents who view you as the parent. Very interesting. This girl writes, "Hi, Christina. I was just listening to your most recent episode. You talked about your unconditional love for your child and it made it sound so natural. That got me thinking, and it occurs to me that my mom's love has always been conditional. I've always known it's, what can you do for me? My mom has disowned and re-owned my brothers multiple times over the years when she feels like it. I know she does love us, but not unconditionally. I find myself as an adult hating it when people do nice things for me just because they want to. I prefer they don't, because all I can think is, great, now I owe them, and it hangs over my head. It's almost like I resent their help. It's hard to enjoy others' kind gestures because I focus more on adding up how much I am indebted to them and how to pay them back. How do I start accepting the kindness and help of others? Thank you, Erica." Wow. Wow. I love that email. I love this email because do you hear the fucking layers in this? Do you hear how juicy that is and how insightful this girl is? Erica, I love it. This is very, very insightful of you. So you realize that your mom's a bit of a child. She's a lot. Sometimes it happens where parents look to the kid to fulfill their emotional needs. Sometimes their physical needs. If you have I've heard stories of alcoholic or drug addled parents who the child has to literally tuck them into bed sometimes, or pick the, you know, clean the vomit up off the floors. And then there are other smaller ways. Gosh, I'm reading this book right now. I heard about it on Gilmartin, that's Laurie Kilmartin, the fucking funny comedian, Laurie Kilmartin, Paul Gilmartin's. Let me find it. Sorry guys, should have had this up on deck. Bookshelf. Oh God, my affirmations. I'm so crazy. I love Louise Hay. Oh, it's under audiobooks. That's why. The drama of the gifted child, and then the emotional incest syndrome. Okay. The emotional incest syndrome. I highly recommend this for anybody who grew up in a codependent, weird parent child dynamic where the parent, made you the parent and you had to emotionally care for them. So this isn't just about, actual incest, or it's not sexual necessarily. But it does cross boundaries that feel ooky and gross. And I think that's what a lot of us are like, wait, I don't like being around this person. I don't know why. Well, here's why. Most probably because they weren't very parent-y to you. So this mother is what you can do for me. And that's a really, really harmful thing to grow up in as a child, because now you are responsible for your parent. There are meetings. There are CODA meetings, CODA.org. I believe you can look into that and you can meet other people that are going through the same thing, support groups. And then these books, yes, The Emotional Incest Syndrome. I highly recommend that. And old school classic, The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller. Check that one out. I don't know if you've read that one yet. I'm in the process of reading both of these. So once I'm done, I will brief you guys fully because I just love this shit. So I love this. Your mom has disowned and re-owned my brothers multiple times over the years when she feels like it. So it sounds like you were the chosen child. Sometimes parents choose a good girl or a good boy, and then they make the other ones bad. And you don't say that she did that to you, but just your brothers. So extra, extra mind fucky. That's fun. That's neat. Thanks, Mom. So you probably feel some weird stuff toward your brothers too. A little maybe guilt, whatever. Maybe a little jealousy from them. I don't know. I'm reading into this. Okay, so of course you would feel weird when people want to do things for you out of the kindness of their own heart. Because a lot of the stuff your mother did, I'm just guessing, was conditional for you. You knew that there were strings attached. And that's usually what happens in these unhealthy parent-child relationships, is that there really is no unconditional just giving. There are strings attached, right? You knew that there was a price to pay for the kindness that you were getting. And yep, I got it. Totally had that happening in my mother and I's relationship. There's always a price to pay. How do you get out of that? Okay. How do I start accepting the kindness and help of others? I told you this week I would get into this discussion on boundaries and how you do that. This is like, by the way, boundaries is like, this is a 10-year thing for me, learning about boundaries and feelings and stuff. So I'm basically giving you the cliff notes on a subject that took me many years to learn and really should be worked out with a licensed therapist again. But well, first of all, you have to surround yourself with safe people that are not manipulating you and not expecting things in return. And you have to do that by kind of working out all the other stuff. Because remember what I talked about at the beginning of this episode is like, you're going to keep attracting the mom types, the people that will make the kindness conditional or will expect something until you've resolved that underlying mom stuff. So yeah, I'm sorry, but I do think you got to get your mom stuff right before you're going to attract the right people. But here, let's do boundaries. First of all, setting boundaries is one of those ubiquitous sort of like, what? What is that? Like I you hear this stuff and I've heard it for years and I was like, oh yeah, I get that. That's just telling people fuck off, right? Isn't that just telling somebody to go away when you don't want them around? And no, believe it or not, there's actually a lot more to establishing and upholding boundaries. Okay, so number one, you have to be able to identify that which makes you feel ooky. And how do you do that? Well, you kind of have to tune into your feelings. And those of us that have problems with boundaries or have had them or whatever, and when I say problems with boundaries, some people, and I didn't even know that I had those problems years ago. It's usually when somebody is overstepping them and you feel shitty. It feels bad to be around so-and-so. It feels bad to be in the relationship with so-and-so. And you know it feels bad and then you just keep doing it. So that's how you know that your boundaries are being violated. When you feel angry, when you feel depressed around somebody, anxious, you know that that feeling is a boundary violation. Now, the problem with people that have these issues is that you don't even know how to have the feelings. Feelings are, again, that's a language that you are taught as a young person. And if you're not taught, it gets harder. So try to tune into your feelings to begin with. When someone acts in a way, this is a list I just found on psychcentral.com, 10 ways to build and preserve boundaries. When someone acts in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable, that's a cue to us. They may be violating or crossing a boundary. So number one is identifying the ooky feelings. Hey, that doesn't feel good being around this person. Why? Number And also, name your limits. You can't set good boundaries if you're unaware or unsure of where you stand. So identify your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual limits. Consider what you can tolerate and accept what makes you feel uncomfortable or stressed. And a lot of times, those of us who grew up having our boundaries habitually stepped over don't even know what that means. You don't even know what that shit is, where you're like, wait, that's not... There are limits to things. Like, I can rest when I'm tired. I can not go over and do errands for this person when I don't feel like it. I remember personally, it started with like holidays. Like, I don't want to go to five people's houses. I don't feel good going to, you know, mom's house, stepdad, dad, stepmom. I don't want to do that shit anymore. I want to do like one house because I'm exhausted at the end of the holiday. Like things like that where you go, oh, I don't like that. And I will tell you that when you start to say, I don't like that feeling, and then I'm gonna make a rule about this with somebody. Like, hey, if you, for instance, Paul Gilmartin in that episode on codependency and boundaries, they talk about parents who talk about their sex lives with you. If you have a parent that discusses their sex life with you, you can be like, hey, yeah, I'll talk to you, but the minute you bring up X, Y, or Z, I'm gonna get off the phone with you. And you have to be direct. That's another one thing on this list is like, be direct. Hey, and say it just like that, not angrily and not in a shitty way. Just, hey, you know, I enjoy talking to you, but if you bring up X, Y, and Z, I will have to get off the phone with you. It's as cut and dry as that. And then you have to follow through on the boundary. Otherwise, that person, you're training that person how to treat you, right? And if you don't follow through, as I've learned with a toddler, they will just continue to do the shitty thing to you over and over and over and over. So direct is great. And it will feel weird in the beginning when you put these boundaries down. I remember in the beginning, I was, you know, putting down certain rules with certain people, and it feels weird. You feel like a selfish, guilty turd. I remember before my mother's passing, I didn't enjoy being alone with her. This is like years and years before she and I stopped speaking, but I hated spending alone time with her because when she got me alone, she could be really mean to me. And I made a rule, boundary in my head of like, all right, I'm going to go see her, but I will always have a friend because I can't do it alone. I cannot do this alone. Yeah. And you feel like a bad girl. You feel like a bad kid. It's really a mind fuck, but just know that that's normal. It's really, really, really normal. So that's that one. Practice self-awareness. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. Consider your past and present. We know this. This is what we talked about. What consider your past. Who's a parent and who's a child? Being aware of that stuff is going to be, it's going to make you able to, identify the offenders, the people that are boundary steppers, if you will. It just helps to know. That's why therapy is so useful, because you can go like, oh, that's what that is. That's why I don't like being around Uncle So-and-so or whatever, whoever the fuck it is that you need deal with. And then make self-care a priority. That's so important. It's so important. And I have to tell you that, like, especially even now, I think about it in terms of like stand up. Like a lot of people, like I was just talking to this newer comic and they're like, well, how do you know it's funny? How do you know? And there's this little voice inside of you, right? The small still voice that we talk about in meditation and Buddhism, blah, blah, blah. And the small still voice is the voice, that first voice, the voice that says, go for a walk, go for a swim, say this, do that, run away, blah, blah, blah. And then you ignore the voice, you shout over the voice, and you go, I don't know, I don't want to, you overthink it, your ego steps in and fucks it all up for you. Same goes with like joke premises. You'll be like, oh, that's really funny. Oh, but I can't say that because then these people will get mad at me and that kind of, the point is, those little whispers you hear that tell you to take care of yourself and how, like, you should rest. You need to rest. You need to go and exercise. You need to eat something. You need to blah, 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 blah. All that stuff, self-care, you need to stop working so much. Shit like that. A lot of people that grew up in with their boundaries constantly stepped over don't assert their needs. That's what that is. And your needs are really important. Otherwise, you're such an unhappy person. You have needs. They're legitimate. That's the whole thing. Oh, man, man, man. Okay, start small. Like any new skill, assertively communicating your boundaries takes practice. Start with a small boundary that isn't threatening to you, and then incrementally increasing to more challenging boundaries. Build upon your success, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Start small. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Here's a really neat one that I do, and I encourage people. I don't answer phone calls past a certain time in the evening. I don't read my text messages past a certain time in the evening, and I don't check emails until a certain time in the morning. I think that's really important, especially if you have people in your life that you don't necessarily want to deal with their fucking texts or their whatever. That helps. It helps also just to clear a space for you, for your needs of quiet and of recharging your own stuff. You know, you don't need to address everything all the time. It's really, really easy to get sucked into the 24 hours on the email and texting. It's really fucking exhausting. I'm sorry, I didn't get, I rambled too much this episode, and I have some more emails that I would love to get to next week. And I promise to do that. I know this episode went up late today. Sorry, guys. I'm just catching up. But I wanted to make sure that something went out today. This will be up on YouTube later than usual because I got to it later. Anyways, I hope you're having a great week. I hope you continue to have a great week. And until next time, that's been Deep Rose.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with.
Yeah, it's Christina P, aka Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house, it's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party, our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke. Or was it Socrates, Aristotle, or Plato, maybe Hippocrates? Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life. And you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.